Hey there, my friend. It's Trisha Carr. Real quick before we head into this episode, I just want to make sure that you know about Modern Mystic Life, a subscription service for spiritual mentoring and education. The monthly subscription is only $11.11 per month. We have regular support and inspiration delivered with the utmost ease right into your text messenger 2 to 4 times per week. You can use your mobile device or your desktop messenger to access the lessons and meditations, a monthly MP3 download of a produced meditation, at least once per month live meditation led by me. There is no account login, and we have a monthly live class workshop. These are usually $35 for non-subscribers, so it is quite a deal. And the community is amazing. This is a way for you to support the Charmed Life podcast and also a way for us to be able to work more closely together. So do check out how you can subscribe in the show notes. I hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Charmed Life podcast. This podcast is all about magic, metaphysics, mysticism, and the unconditional love of the universe, and I am your host. My name is Trisha Carr. Well, I want you to hold on to your head, your heart, and your gut for this conscious conversation, but in a really good way. This is a really power-packed episode with the conversation with my very special guest. She has ignited such a positivity inside me, and it's similar to the previous episode, if I'm doing them in the order that I thought, but the episode with Sandy Forster with the Law of Attraction. I mean, I love all my children equally. I love all of my guests, and I love all of the episodes that I create for you guys. So I'm definitely not picking favorites here, but these two are synchronizing to really minister and serve me at a particular time in a particular way. And I just am sharing that with you because there's a good chance that it's for you too, that it's being synchronized that way. If you show up on this podcast, that these are coming to you at exactly the right time. So if it's your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. This is going to be a great episode, so inspiring, and to help you to be positive and hopeful and move forward in healing and uplifting and being motivated. If you are to be motivated to be a leader or to be successful or in whatever it is that is your dream and your desire, that's what we have in this episode. And in this podcast, those of you who are regulars, why thank you so much for being here. We are here to bring empowerment from the unseen realms, whether that's from spirit guides, angels, elementals, interdimensionals, but also the unseen laws of the universe. And when I say unseen, I mean in quotation marks, unseen, because it's just on a different energy or light spectrum than our formed 3D material reality, but it is a part of our reality, and they are tools that we have a divine birthright to partake of. And that's what we have here in this episode. And in every single one of them, I will be posting some solo episodes of channeled material where I have gone live or presented it in a class such as my Modern Mystic Life Academy, where I am giving workshops every month, and sometimes they are channeled. And so sometimes I share little samples from that or when I go live on other platforms. And that's coming your way too. I have a lot in the queue. I'm just trying to dole them out as we do. And we have programs coming up for you too, because I am a spiritual teacher teaching you how to open your intuitive abilities like animal communication and multidimensional mediumship. And also, you know, I do one-on-one sessions. I have a hypnotherapy practice. It's a transpersonal hypnotherapy is my specialization, including things like past life regression, but really to be able to move you forward on your life path, your soul mission, in whatever ways that you are making those changes and shifts. But I also give intuitive readings channeled. I give channeling sessions. So check out my website. As we head into this conversation, let me tell you all about my very special guest. Judy Wilkins Smith is a highly regarded family patterns, systemic work and constellations expert, transformational coach, motivational speaker, and author who is passionate about individual growth, visionary leadership, and positive accelerated global change. The founder of System Dynamics for Individuals and Organizations, she has 18 years of expertise assisting high-performance individuals, Fortune 500 executives such as Chevron, JP Morgan, Kellogg's, and ExxonMobil, and legacy families to end limiting cycles and create lasting breakthroughs and transitions into peak performance. She is a regular guest on TV news and entertainment shows and is the author of Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint, a powerful guide to transformation through disentangling multi-generational patterns. And that was published by Sounds True in June of 2022. So it is pretty fresh. It's a pretty fresh book and just about less than a year old. And I'm very excited. I didn't read it before I got to speak with Judy, but I really, really want to. I'm so grateful and blessed to be in your company, you listener, as well as the presence of my guests. And I just want to extend that gratitude to you and connect with my heart wide open to you, if you are open to it, as we head into this episode where Judy talks to us about the brain, the heart, and the gut. My heart is open to you right now. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome to this conversation, and I will chat with you on the other side. Judy, I'm so excited. I can already feel your energy, your infectious, motivational energy. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. Welcome.
It is lovely to be with you. You're in, hopefully by now, sunny California. We've got your wet stuff coming this way.
Oh, yeah, it's making its way that way. Yes, it's a bit chilly still. It's weird. It's sunny, but it's chilly. So maybe that's coming for you next.
Yeah, I think it is actually. We're down a couple of degrees, more than I would like.
Yeah, us too. Well, maybe we'll talk about climate change some other time. Oh, that's something on all our hearts. But I am so excited to get into all of the inspiration that you are up to. Reading about you and even in our preliminary chat, I just know you have so much hope and inspiration to offer myself as well as all of the listeners. So would you mind just getting us into your story, your work, your journey, wherever you would like to start?
Sure. So my background was actually medical arena. I moved over here. My father was killed. He was actually killed in the medical arena. And so that door shut very, very tight for me. And then it was either write books or go crazy. And going crazy didn't seem like a good option. So I began with books. And I was doing research into it. And I came across this work. And the person who introduced it to me said, come study the work and I'll help you with a book. So I went and studied the work, got zero help with the book. May I just remind everybody? And then it became a question of people saying to me, well, if you could do that for individuals, can you do it for organizations? Of course, because organizations are made up of what? Individuals. Mm-hmm. So, yes. And so I became a systemic executive coach, and I also get called in to do a lot of work when companies are stuck and they really don't know what to do and they've tried all sorts of things. Then they'll come to me and say, can we look systemically? And what we do to look systemically is we use what we call a constellation, and that is a 3D representation of the issue that you carry in your head or in the company, where you're trying to figure it out in your head. This gives you a very tangible way to take it out of your head, put it in front of you, and be able to test it in real time, and then see where the obstacles are and where the opportunities are. And so I do a lot of that kind of work. And then in addition to that, I also train people to do what I do around the world. And I have live events, I have Zoom events, I have different ones. My favorite, of course, are live ones, because then I get to use live representatives and people get to have an experience of standing in what we call the knowing field or the collective conscious and having a direct experience of it. It's something we're not normally taught to do, but this literally makes the invisible visible and the unconscious conscious. And so now you have an embodied experience of whatever it is that's going on, and that creates rapid lasting shifts and those aha moments that we all talk about. So the work is scientific and at the same time deeply transformational.
That's amazing. I felt myself having resistance and because of my own personal experiences that you are welcomed into a company to assess, yeah. But are they really going to accept it? Because it's like just yesterday in a case conference with my hypnotherapy practice where all of the practitioners get together with the clinical observer, talk about a case. And this one person was bringing forth a case. She works with children, but the parents aren't cooperating. The parents aren't doing the homework. The parents aren't, a child isn't going to be able to accept a subconscious shift if the parents won't. So I'm just thinking of a company in the same way. And I think it's from my own experience working in different kinds of corporations and companies, which I've since put in the past. But I guess the higher-ups saying they want change, but they really just want you to do it to them, and then it's your, and that they're not going to do anything. How can you break me out of that belief? Because I don't want to believe that. Or just what is your experience with actually getting the higher-ups to budge?
Actually, it's super interesting because those who I coach are C-suite. Okay. So I coach the CEOs, CFOs, and CFOs mm-hmm. are typically my most skeptical. They want facts and they want figures, and yet my sweet spot is often the CFO. Nice. And what I found is if I speak their language first mm-hmm. and I understand what they want logically, I've found a way or my particular approach is to go in with logic and to show them the neuroscience behind this work and the epigenetics behind the work, and then to very logically point out how patterns come through companies, especially in theirs. I'll look for one that comes through in theirs. And then what I'll do is I'll say, let's look at the issue. I've had a CFO say to me, we are not doing that woo-woo stuff. And I go, okay. And we sit down and I say to him, let's look at the issue. Let's find all the components of that issue, every single one. Okay, can we put each one on a post-it note? Because they're used to doing that. Mm-hmm. So we have a look at it in the post-it note. And then I say to him, okay, I need to see it bigger picture. I need to understand it a bit more. Can we put each one on a piece of computer paper? So they do that and I ink it up in a very specific way. So it then becomes a directional marker. And I said to them, okay, so place it for me the way that it feels for you when you're trying to solve this problem. Just lay it out for me. And so they do that. And just from that, I could see who's engaged, who's not, who's close to whom, what are the alliances, where are the obstacles, where are the opportunities. And I begin to ask questions about that. And with this particular guy, we went on for about a couple of hours, and he said, Dawn, I've just figured the solution out. I haven't been able to in 2 years, but when I could see it and I could touch it and I can hear it, it makes sense. And he looked at me and said, you did a constellation, didn't you? And I went, yep. So it's really about being in their world first and understanding mm-hmm. their language and their pain points and the way that it lands for them, and then being able to see where the patterns are and connect the dots. So people also ask me, and I'm sure you've been asked this, they also say to me, yeah, no CEO or CFO is going to sit and tell you his life. And I go them wrong, because when I go in, the first thing I tell them is who you are now is a direct result of how and who you were and are at home. Mm-hmm. Those patterns are either in conflict or they may be a limitation, or the one is supporting the other. If we know what's in there, we can use it in service of you becoming a visionary leader. Are you interested? And when they sort of I'll say to them, do you ever use your gut? Well, maybe. And your heart? And I say to them, so you have all three, head, heart, and gut. You're using your head, which means you're costing the company 66%. Because you're not using heart and gut. So mm-hmm. you're actually cheating the company. And they go, oh. And you could kind of see it kick in. So then when we start to do the work, I said to them, okay, tell me where you feel that. Tell me what your sense is. What is your gut telling you? And pretty soon they figure out, hey, this is not woo-woo. My body is a pretty accurate compass. It's getting input and I'm making meaning of it. What can I do with that? And that breaks down the rest of the barrier.
So much there. And you're talking, you know, how I understand all of this is through a hypnotherapeutic model. Well, first of all, you could explain, which we possibly do. I mean, we have neurites in our gut and heart. And
exactly,
so yes, exactly. So we've got a
three-brain system, right?
Exactly. But we are, and actually with subconscious work, with hypnotherapy, we either say there's anywhere from 80 to 95% is actually all of the subconscious or the unconscious, which is below the neck. The conscious is up here. It's like more in the brain area. And the brain, so then it's anywhere from at most 12%, but it's 5%. So even though you're splitting it up to equal thirds, it's actually less than that. But
there you go.
You know, yeah. And but also what you were talking about answering my question, it's exactly like, so I think my first thing is that in my historical past and with that case that I mentioned is that that therapist doesn't have access to the executive tier, the parents.
Right.
She's only working with the subordinate. And I think that's been my experience where the executive tier is like, you just fix it. You know, it's not my problem. It's yours. Go fix my company. And it's like, it's a trickle down.
It is a trickle down. And if we're talking about parents, if I'm working with parents and children, if they tell me my child has a problem, I need you to see them. I tell them, nope, I see you first because you're the problem and they're the symptom.
Yes, absolutely. And that's how it is with animals too, because I work with animals, as I mentioned to you.
Right.
And it's not a blaming thing. It's just how it's showing up in the family network. And a company is like, it's an ecosystem. I know a family is an ecosystem, a company is an ecosystem. But what you were talking about to answer my question, especially with the CFOs, is you work with their suggestibility type. And in my model, in my training, we have different kinds of suggestibility type, which is how you receive information. And some people are on this side of the scale that is what is called emotional, but it's actually a misnomer. It's more intellectual. And so that's how they receive it, but they still have to, it has to be that embodied. The subconscious has to pull it in. Do you have them? I mean, sometimes it takes time though, because when a person is so emphasized with using that conscious mind or the intellectual or cognitive model, the somatic experiencing is, it takes a little time to revive that. So how do you do that? Do you just have to take more time?
You do. Well, actually, I don't take more time, but what I do tell them is this. In anything that you do, like you said, you've got the head, you've got the heart, you've got the gut. The gut is your compass, unless you're using it for anxiety, in which case it's your fight or flight piece, but it's actually a compass. Your heart is the one that your heart is key, because when your heart opens, the frontal lobe, the neocortex lights up and it starts going, oh boy, she's awake. What can we do? What can we imagine? What can we see? So the heart has to open first. When the heart opens and that lights up, the gut goes, oh yeah. And so for something to happen or shift, you've really got to have those three aligned. Now, the beauty when it isn't aligned is that if the heart is closed, what I look at is, what is the language? What is the pattern? What are the thoughts, feelings, and actions? Because once I know what those are, I know what my in is and I know what my exit is. We've got to first work at that. If it's not working, people are telling me, hey, I'm still stuck in my past. I have an unprocessed event. Something is going on that has me more here than there. And for anyone to shift, if you want to manifest, if you have a goal, it's got to be stronger than your current state. And it also has to be head, heart, gut aligned. So what do I do with people who are struggling with that? I first of all acknowledge it. Okay, let's acknowledge you're stuck. Where are you stuck? Okay. And then I think the flip piece is understanding where you're stuck and how it's actually serving you. Because what I know is that in every single apparent train wreck, there is a gift. without exception. There is not an exception. There is always a gift waiting for you to see it and take it and turn it into something else. So if everybody in the company is anxious, how are you the calm? If everyone in the company is risk averse because something happened, how are you the adventurer? So you're always looking at two patterns, the one that wants to stop and the one that wants to start. And that's the way I'll position it with them. Let's look, what's trying to stop and what's trying to start. And key, as you mentioned earlier, is absolutely no blame, no shame, no name. It's let's look at what's happening. Let's be curious. Let's go on an adventure and let's see what we can find. And when I phrase it that, when I say to them, do you understand that for you to move as a leader, you've got to do the following? So let's go in search of it. Do you want it? Because if you don't have the appetite, I can't help. But if you've got the appetite, we can go looking. So it's really shifting them off the dogmatic piece. And if it's very much in the head, I think one of the things that I often say is, don't knock the brain. It got you here. All that we're asking you to do is develop more languages, become bilingual or trilingual, use the heart as well, use the gut. Because if you want to be a great leader or a great parent, pushing doesn't help. Inviting up is what gets people to go there. Oh, and by the way, with kids,
yeah,
even if the parents aren't willing to do what they need to do, there are ways to work with kids. It just makes it so much more difficult.
Because they still are, they still are autonomous, even though they're very much I see it as a sliding scale, you know, like from the time, from the time a child starts to crawl, because now they're starting to be able to move away from parent. There's a sliding scale of autonomy and, you know, maybe even up to, depending on your relationship, 20, there's still like a little hair of the parent having some kind of coverage over the child. But, you know, it's a lot harder. And I guess the child would need to build more autonomy, you know, as much as they can inside the relationship with the parent. But it, you know, and that's the same. I mean, there's only so much autonomy that an employee of a company can have without having to leave, you know, if it's not really working for them.
Absolutely. And this is what you will see is that they leave. In a company, yes, they will leave. In a family, this often leads to a person who says, I can't stay in the family. I've got to leave. It's too toxic for me. That's not true. What they're actually saying is, I need to expand beyond the current conscience of the family system. Yeah. And so I say to them, you're not leaving. You're not leaving. You're taking steps ahead. And all that's going to happen is you're expanding and the others are going to look at you. And when you don't die, you'll see it suddenly starts to rotate. So just one degree of difference in a family means the rest of the system has to begin reorienting. And it will. It may take a while, but it will.
I actually did leave my family, but that's because there's a person in the family who inflicted abuse on me as a child, mental, emotional, and sexual, and that person is still the center of the family. And so I have a boundary that person won't be in my life. So it's really hard for everyone else who's connected to that person to have a relationship with me. But I guess in a sense, you know, it's very, very, intermittent. And, you know, so in a way we do have connections still in order for me to have
that boundary.
I was going
to say, you haven't left the family. It's literally impossible for you to leave the family system. What you're doing is expanding a different part. Mm-hmm. And at some point things will begin to shift. It may take a while, but it will shift. Yeah. What you've said is, the pattern of abuse stops here for me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm creating a different pattern where there's not abuse, where there's expansion and freedom and love and respect. And eventually, even if it's not now, you may see a niece or a nephew or a whatever it is, will either go through something similar and look at you and go, oh, there's another way. I can do this differently. So you haven't left, you're expanding.
Yes. And that person I'm not blood related to, I know that your book and your work, you talk about being able to disentangle from multi-generational patterns. Well, I should say the name of your book is Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint, A Powerful Guide to Transformation Through Detangling Multi-Generational Patterns, which is really beautiful as I listen to the title of this and what we've already talked about. And I think you're using that model directly onto the ecology of a company, which is modeling a family, even though it's business.
Absolutely.
It still models a family. I would just love to hear more about the hope of disentangling from the multi-generational patterns, because I have really personally, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, have very painful ones and very overt ones. And actually, in some ways, I was speaking with my husband about it, I feel lucky that mine are overt, because they're the subtle and insidious ones where it's like, on the surface, your family is good. You know, parents are together,
right.
Nobody, no poverty. But there can be things that are deeply painful inside of that. And it's not as obvious as what I went through. Anyway, I'll stop.
You're
laying
good.
The groundwork. I would love for you to just expand on any of that.
Okay, so the piece for that is this. When people tell me they've had particularly painful growing up lives, mm-hmm. I always tell them, you're very lucky.
Right.
And they go, what? And I go, yep, because you get to change that. Mm-hmm. You can stay victim of that, which means you're going to repeat it. Because if you stay a victim, you will repeat that pattern. But if you look at that pattern and you say, no, not for me, what you're doing is, you know, the emotional DNA that I teach, emotional DNA is in your inherited patterns of thoughts, feelings, actions. Okay. But you get to a point where you go, this is too small for me. This isn't working for me. This is awful. I hate it. And you begin to change it. Now you're literally wiring a different system into your brain. And into your heart and into your gut. And in doing that, it's not just about you, because the byproduct is it's going to affect those around you. So one of the ways to do that is, if you have a particular one, an overt one, is to sit down and write down, what is this pattern that I would like to change? When did this start for me? What was happening in my life at the time? What did I make it mean about me? What did I make it mean about others? How has it affected me? Very importantly, does anybody else in the family have a pattern with a similar flavor? Because if they do, you now have a multi-generational pattern. The beauty of that is it can be many generations. But the minute you start thinking one new thought, and you feel one new feeling, and you take one new action, you're literally reaching into that quantum space, and you're doing the information that you spoke about. Mm-hmm. You're inventing. You're taking from the inventory out there, and you're bringing it in. Mm. So now you're changing that pattern, and literally everything is possible. So how would I like it to look? How would I like my relationships to look? Because you have relationship DNA, money DNA, career DNA, leadership DNA. How do I want that to look? Never mind what anybody tells me is or isn't possible. It's not the truth. It's how do I want to make it look? Because what we do is we grow up listening to things like, money doesn't grow on trees. Your family is the family that you were given. That's the end of it. Leaders are born, not made. None of that's true.
Yeah, right.
Made it the truth. But it's really our truth, and we can change that absolutely anytime we want to. And to do that, when you do the exercise I described, you then stop and say, so what do I really want? But you've got to be in the place of using elevated emotions. Not I want to go kill him, because that's not helpful. But what do I really want? Because when you have that passion and that want, it's like the baby who learns to crawl. Wants are huge. People are always being told don't want too much. No, want as much as you possibly can. Because the more you want, the more you start to wake up that passion. And the more you want and the more you wake that up, it opens your heart, it settles the gut, the brain switches on. And if it seems like a big stretch, great, you're doing the right thing. Now write down the one new thought. the one new feeling, the one new action. And you keep traveling with that. And when you feel yourself despondent, just understand you're being pulled back into that old systemic trance. When you feel yourself happy and on fire and passionate, you will get there. You will get there. Never mind what anybody else says. You're going to find ways to go over, around, under, but you will get there. And then you're creating new emotional DNA.
I love that. That's wonderful. So I love this synchrony of doing this podcast because it's always just what I need. And it also, I just did an interview yesterday, and we're in the similar territory as what I, probably everyone who's listening, the very previous episode that's published, that's probably the order that it'll be in, about the law of attraction.
Yes.
The key is that feeling component. So before Judy and I started, what she mentioned to the information is, I've said before on the podcast about, I had this epiphany where when I'm working with clients or students and obviously with myself too, and we say, I'm trying to understand, and we sometimes even gesture upward, like to our head, or look up. And that's because that inventory or that invent that Judy was talking about, we are literally standing under that energy that we need to become informed. That's why it's called information. So it needs to go past, not just in the head bubbling around, we know it, but we don't do it, or it's not happening and it's not being. But it is the emotional charge that is everything. And that is, it's in the gut. It bubbles up to the heart, or it's attuned by the heart. But the thing is to be able to allow that to be the positive thing, because we're so seduced regularly, daily, to be in the negative thing. I don't want to have this, kind of relationship or this kind of work or this kind of life.
I know what I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. And we're seduced into that experience all day long, every day. So we need to, how do people infuse into really expanding the positive, joyful state that you're talking about? What do you have for tips for people to be able to find that and sustain or dwell in that for some time?
So first of all, like I said before we were on, the brain has got to tell the body a story the body can believe. And people go, okay, I'm so stupid. I'm such an idiot. I never should have done that. I'm in such trouble. You can feel that. Your whole body feels that, and it knows it to be the truth. Who told it the truth? You did. Now, I can't believe I did that. It was amazing. Everybody loved what I just did. It clicked. Your whole body feels that. I want to do that again and again. And your body goes, yes. What's happened? Your brain has told your heart. Your heart goes, I'm feeling it. And your gut goes, yes. And now you're in such a state, all you can do is smile. That's where you want to get to. And it just takes a little practice, because the big sleep of humanity is that we've been taught, you're a sinner, you're born in sin, you live in sin, you should try to die nicely so that you get a decent seat L34 at the top, which is a big load of rubbish. So we keep ourselves very victimized. Mm-hmm. That big sentence of, you're too small, you're too not worth it, it's only the 1% who get it. Yeah, because the 1% figured out that, guess what? If I get happy, if I get passionate, if I believe in me and go with that and see me as my big adventure, it is not arrogant, it is humble. I'm truly putting myself into belief and into service of the universe. Here we go. And when you do that, you will get yourself all the way there. So it's all about gratitude, kindness, joy, keeping yourself in that state of happiness. And yeah, there are enough challenges. I've had a few in the last while where I have literally just stood there and gone, okay, universe, are you on hiatus? Or are you just sending stuff to test me? Or are you trying to put me in the pig pen so I can find some gold nugget at the bottom of this? And it's work. And I know I have to do that, because if I don't, I stop everything cold. The body goes, oh, well, she went to sleep again. Good luck, guys. We've got to wait for the next jolt. No, it is habit. It is habit. We've got to keep not even practicing, doing one good thought, one good feeling, one good action all the time. If you can practice 20 seconds of joy, even in the middle of the most yuck place in your life, and like I say, I've had a few, you're going to do fine because you start training your brain to look for what's right, not what's wrong. Here's the other terrible thing that we teach people. You've got to keep evolving and fixing what's broken. You're not broken. You never were broken. You're a being in search of more layers to expand and to have a bigger adventure. You are not broken.
And we will be right back. Hi, friend. It's Trisha Carr with an invitation for you. If you are ready to accelerate your ascension and connect to the swift flow of your life mission, Mind Body Ascension Acceleration Coaching. All of my clinical training, my experience from teaching and providing countless sessions and classes, one-on-one, group coaching, healing, reading, teaching, channeling, as well as my calibration as a human design reflector, I'm offering all of this to you to step up your entire life, to accelerate your ascension walk. If you've had a single session with me, if you've had coaching, or if you've experienced transformation from any of my offerings, my classes, podcasts, videos, well, this is an accelerated and exponentially charged. This is what my soul has prepared for an eternity and up to now. And if you hear this call, then this is also co-created with your soul. Your life is meant to be joy first and a service as a close and integrated second. This coaching is especially tuned for high achievers who want to accelerate their progress on their life mission and create mind-body well-being and higher attunement. Submit to work with me in this powerful container, this premium coaching. If you feel the call, you can do it. I guide, you take action. I hold the resonant projection field, channel your steps, and you take action. The first action step is to fill out an application, the link to which you will find in the description. Be prepared, be ready to upgrade your mind-body ascension and your connection and flow with your spiritual mission. And now back to the show. In addition to the sort of mythological, or what obviously we can recognize as religious narrative of you're a sinner, and, you know, it's just the message that a child receives between ages 0 to 8, too.
And you're keeps wrong. Receiving.
Yeah. You're wrong. You're wrong. You shouldn't want to play. You should get up and put on this terrible feeling shoe and clothes and go sit
and
in that.
And like it.
Go sit in the cold room and be quiet and sit still. You're wrong. Like, your instincts, your joy is incorrect. In order to train children to adapt to that outside world. And, you know, I don't obviously blame all of the parents in the world. It's a puzzle that is, I mean, it takes so much. It's, you have to summon so much being in order to also train the child while maintaining their capacity that they're not wrong and that they are, that joy is correct for them. It's really hard. And even if the parent does everything right, the world's going to do that to them.
Well,
us.
The world's going to do it to us if we allow it. If yeah. we buy into the idea that everybody's right and we are sinners and we're terrible and this is our penance, we're on earth. Yeah, but we can actually change that and have an incredible world to live in. Mm-hmm. And being a victim, can we stop monetizing and glamorizing and sanitizing being a victim? It's going to hit us all at some stage. You are going to be a victim of something. News flash. You can sit there, or this is your pivot point. It's there for you to take and say, okay, this happened. What can I do with it? I have had people really be very angry with me and say, how dare you? I suffered. Yeah, you suffered. Past.
Past tense. Yeah.
Past. Yeah. Can we please get through to what you are going to do with this? And by the way, the word suffer means to undergo. You've been sent an experience to undergo. What are you going to do with it? If you get sent an experience, are you going to minimize it and make it dark? Or are you going to actually say, this was the moment that I chose to go and do something remarkable? You see this two people in an accident, both paralyzed from the waist down. One says, my life is over, and they're right. The other one says, my life has just begun, and they are right. Choose, people. Choose.
Yeah. Which, of course, doesn't negate the fact that there are, you know, there are people who are marginalized and there are people who are under systemic suffering, you know, that is imposed upon them. And that if you are paralyzed from the waist down, you're going to have your feelings. You're going to mourn. You're going to grieve.
Of course, you're going to. Yeah. Of course. And you should, and you must. And it's important. And then what are you going to do?
Right.
Because there is a part that's lost. But what is the part to find? And in terms of people who are marginalized, you know, I look at that and it's the one thing that I can speak to. I'm white. Yes, I am a woman. But in the country that I came from and the place that I went to college, there were two languages. My language wasn't the language of choice. English was not the language of choice. And they said to me, we're not going to speak your language. You will just have to adapt. I grew up with parents who taught us, don't whine. Whatever you've got, do something. So guess what? I learned the other language. Now tell me, who's better off? The person with one language or the person with two?
Well, I'm American, so I'm going to agree that it's two, because we're taught one language for the most part here.
And it and was literally, better for yeah, us. It was literally, is it one or is it two? I want to learn another language. I very much want to learn a third language, because it's, for me, it's not about, well, I'm not learning yours because you're not up to my standard or you're different. It's, I really like to be smarter. Yeah. I want to be able to know what more can I do. And the more I teach myself, the more I'm capable of. So I think the other thing for me is that if I'm in the middle of a situation that's really rough, it's what can I learn here? What am I going to be able to do that I couldn't before? I had somebody in a marriage who really wasn't somebody who did things. I learned. So guess what? I have a whole lot more that I can do, a whole lot more that's open to me. It's really not about what can't I do. It's about what can I find here that I can use that's useful. And it doesn't matter if all I'm learning is I can smile. You have no idea where that will bring you.
Oh, yeah.
Or where kindness will bring you. I have a client now who's about to land an incredible position, because she did an act of kindness for somebody that she disconnected from for many years, could have not done the act of kindness, but did. And that same person has turned around and found her. And she's about to reap the reward. So be aware. Just be aware. Be kind. Be open. Be learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You speak of language, and I love looking at language as to what we're talking about here, a mind-body connection, or having the brain, heart, and gut online, because our language is very organic. And when we look at, and if we could even do something like change our language, as you talk about that exercise of the new thought, and if you can look at that thought and even change the language of it, but... So you said something a little bit ago about victimhood, and you said that the last thing you said is that we sanitize victimhood. And this is, so the word sanity and sanitize have the same root.
Root, right.
Cleaning or making comfortable, making the standard even. Like if it's clean, it's sanitized. If it's sane, then that means that it's an appropriate standard. And that's just what, again, the dogmatic myths of church has done. The martyr is the hero, you know, the one
right.
the one who is without, and lack is pious. And it's so, but this is a multi-generational core wound that we are all freeing ourselves from.
It's also a core opportunity.
Yes.
I don't even see it as a wound. It's itching us. It's a little bit like the pearl. That's that grain of sand there is for a very good reason. It's itching, it's irritating, it makes us do things. Yeah, if something's irritating you, if it makes you sad or mad, it's asking you to change it.
Yeah.
It's telling you, I'm the thing that you need to change now.
Yes.
And you don't have to go and climb mountains to do it. It's literally one new thought, feeling, and action. You are so right with language. I look at language when I do systemic work in constellations. I listen all the time because people will say to me, how did you know what to say to that person? How? Because I listened to your history and I watched your body. So I know what you're doing with your words and I know what you're doing with your movement. And so if that's what you're doing now, what is the antidote? What is A, the spell you're trying to break? Because by the way, we cast spells all day long.
That's why it's called spelling.
Exactly. And we're doing that to ourselves all day long. So what is it that you're trying to change? We speak very specific language about our systems. My heart is broken. I had a client who said to me, I'm burning. I'm on fire. This is absolutely, it ignites me. I cannot believe that I've almost been decimated by my boss. It was catastrophic. And I'm like, whoa. What happened? And she said, well, I was a little bit late and she complained. And I'm like, wait. How did we go from there to here? And I said to her, stop. When you use language like that, and this is for all your listeners, if we use inflated language, don't accuse yourself or think you're stupid. Listen to it.
Right.
Because it's telling you something. And I said to her, well, was there a catastrophe or is something in your family that we haven't spoken about? And she went, no. Well, when I was 5, my mother and I outran a volcano. My brother and father did not. And I said to her, and we're learning this now?
Wait, her brother and father passed away, died of the volcano?
Yeah.
And she hadn't mentioned that as a catastrophe.
No,
That's how sublimated that pain is for her. Right.
It is. But we do this. I mean, I've been at an event where I've worked with a client and I say to them, tell me as much as you can, because everything that you tell me, we can use. And she says to me, I've told you everything. We do the piece of work. She shifts. And I said to her, we're not done, but this is a piece. We're heading towards the door. The entire class is heading towards the door. And she says, would it make a difference if I told you that my mother killed my father when I was 10? And I'm like,
I mean, it's a kind of thing.
Just
it's a thing.
This may fit into exactly what you're trying to work with, which is I avoid painful subjects.
Mm, yeah.
Hello. And we do this to ourselves a lot. Be willing to look. Really be willing to look, but be willing to look, understanding that people are frightened of being triggered or re-triggered. Yeah. No, a trigger is an opportunity. It's an invitation to look. Don't be afraid of it. It's literally saying to you, hey, can I help? Can I be of service? Do you want to play? Let's look. So we really need to start looking at our lives as this big chessboard with moves that are waiting for us to make them. And it's fun and it's adventure. And sometimes it's scary, but it's so worth it.
I have a trigger that is, it's been trying to, it keeps showing up in inopportune times the last few days.
Okay.
And it's showing up right now. So I'm like, I will cry over you later. I will cry you out later. It wants to come out because it is showing me the primary thing that's going on in my world right now that's a problem. It has to, literally what it is, I didn't intend to share it, but I will because I'm trying to do something new, which is maybe share something I feel. Yeah. The person, my mother's husband who did all of that abuse that I mentioned earlier, one of the things that he would do, I mean, it was I lived in torture because everything was controlling me and abusing me mentally, emotionally, and physically. Every possible moment that I was there. But then, so that's how most of my life was. But then about twice a year, I would say on average, he would decide that he was angry at me. And the only people in the house were my mother and you know, the three of us. He would decide that I had done something that angered him and it would never really make any sense. And then he would ignore me like I was a ghost in the house. But for like two or three months.
Oh,
and
wow.
I would still have to sit at the dinner table and he would ignore me and walk past the hallway and he would ignore me. And it was this weird, I had a weird conundrum because he was leaving me alone. He wasn't touching me.
Right.
But the systems of the oppression, mental and emotional abuse were still in place. And so those were, so there was like a ghost that was still abusing me without him touching me. But can you imagine even someone that you really loathe and you don't want to interact with you, making you sit in their presence and ignoring you? And it's like that's shown up a couple of times this last year where I had been taken on to a new position and then they ghosted me. They were still paying me, but they ghosted me. It was this.
Okay.
It was,
so
yeah.
So clearly wants to be seen, right? It's
yeah.
not playing.
And then just yesterday, while I was in that case conference, someone mentioned that this adult person, her father will ignore her sometimes for a while when he is angry at her. And I was in that, again, I'm in the case conference and I'm like, I want to start crying. And the leader even says something. There's a difference between, you know, tears of sorrow and pain and tears of joy. Like there is a chemical difference between them because,
right.
And so it just, I don't know, it's showing up again. And I'm like, it's not appropriate time for me to start sobbing.
No, it's a really appropriate thing to bring up though, because mm-hmm. what's happening is it's not just about you.
Nope, right.
Very much not about you. But what I would ask is who in your family or who in his family was excluded or ignored further back, or who went missing in your family, who literally became a ghost? Who did we not see? Because you're place marking for them. Mm-hmm. So for you, the switch is, I really don't mind what you're doing. I'm very visible. I'm very present. And if you've got people who are paying you but ghosting you, it's to walk in and say, okay, let's talk. What's mm-hmm. happening here? I know I'm getting paid, but I also know you're making me invisible. What is this about? And for you to then have a look at, is there someone else in your family who was ghosted or made invisible? I'm willing to bet there was. Or didn't make it, a miscarriage, a stillbirth, an abortion we don't speak about, and a child who was adopted out. Something went missing and you're place marking for it. And mm-hmm. the way that you handle that is to say, you know what, this is too small for me and it doesn't belong to me. I need to give it back to whoever that was. If you can't find who it was, I would literally just sit down and say, I know you're there. You're a ghost somewhere, and I'm going to give you a place with me. You'll be in my heart, but I can't carry you as the person.
My mother was put into an orphanage when she was very
there
young.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So she's the ghosted one.
And then she was adopted out of the orphanage by mm-hmm. her elder aunt and uncle, and they were controlling and abusive, with religious abuse mostly, but yeah.
And so then you repeat your mom's, you know what you're doing? Mm-hmm. So
and
what
she created the environment for it to happen to me because she married that person, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what happens is your mom gets ghosted and then she gets farmed out and then she goes into a family where there's this abuse going on, but she's ignored and abused and all of that. Here's where you come in. As children, we don't want our parents to suffer alone. And the deep subconscious piece that happens for you is, my dear mom, so that you don't have to suffer alone, me too.
Yeah.
I'll get ghosted like you were ghosted. Mm-hmm. And it's deeply subconscious. Often we don't even know that that pattern's there, but there it is. Your piece is to say, my dear mom, for you who was ghosted and couldn't be seen and was abused, I'm doing it differently. I'm the change agent. I'm the one who's looking at the ghosting and it doesn't happen around me anymore. Mm-hmm. We're done. I'm going to be super visible. Watch me.
And here I am having a podcast.
And I was
YouTube
going to
family.
Say exactly the same thing. And I was going to say, I will speak truth. I will seek out truth. I will be a voice every day. I will look where other people won't look. And you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say, even before my mother married that person, one of the most common things I was told as a child with the other, you know, with my father and that family set was children are to be seen and not heard.
Of course, that was a very, very common one.
It was very popular.
Very popular. Yeah. And I get what it was supposed to be and then what it became, which wasn't always helpful. But for you, the change absolutely is you took on your mother's pattern. And what you want to say to her is, I'm too small for that. I can't do that. I've got to leave that with you. And I've got to do it very differently. And for you who couldn't, I can.
I feel like it's there's also a huge cultural, and thank you so much for that. But I feel like I want to expand it because I feel like there's a huge cultural and multi-generational implication here too, that all of us carry something similar, because as a woman, we have been put away and we have been hushed and we have been ignored. And so even though it's happened in very specific ways for me individually, I feel like this there's a universal component for women, I'm sure for anyone too, but I just wanted to point
only
that
if
out.
You agree.
Of course, absolutely. Yes,
but and it's that's something the that biggest piece is for all of us as women. We do it to each other.
Oh, I know.
Have you seen how vicious we get when a woman is successful? Mm-hmm. We are vicious because this has been in play for a long time. So the invitation is, can I be a woman who is successful, enjoy it and love it and be gentle with it and pass that on to others? Can we all begin enjoying what it's like to be a woman? Now, here's the other piece that is crucial. In victim perpetrator, where we see that men have put us away and put us down, if you rise up then as a woman with anger and hatred, all that happens is you become the new perpetrator and the men become the new victims. And all we've done is swung it around. We've got to make place for both. I have, because I do systemic work, in systemic work, you always hold a place for everyone. So when I hear those white men or those old white men, I'm like, just hold on a second.
Right.
Yes. And who created a lot of the luxuries and a lot of the good stuff that's there? You don't get to selectively marginalize or selectively bash someone else, because all you're doing is exactly what was done to you. So you've learned nothing. So then all we do is we put on another meta statement into the world that says, white men are evil, kill them. Really?
How's that going to look in 100 years?
Yeah. Exactly. We could learn from them. We could bring our own learning to the table. But when you do that, all you've done is flip the switch and started the whole game again. And there is a much nicer game to play.
It's us not taking responsibility that it is a human issue, and that if it were white women or whatever that were in that position, level of consciousness, it's just the person in power, the human in power, and we need to heal this on a collective level.
And change it. For I do not feel marginalized as a woman. I don't.
Right.
Because I grew up, A, with parents who taught us don't whine. And I tell my clients, quit whining, start shining. and show up and to grow up. But for me, I'm not interested in being sad about being a woman. I'm interested in really loving what I can do in this lifetime to have an amazing adventure. And I don't care about the bumps and the bruises. They really are part of what can I learn here? What can I learn here? So for me, I would say disentangling multi-generational patterns, one of my big ones for me is women need to start just showing up with joy. It doesn't matter if there's a guy coming who wants to rain on your parade, step out and find another place for the joy. Eventually he's going to run out of places to do it and you're still going to be in joy, but make it brilliant.
Mm. I want to say amen to that. And I want to let everyone know how they can work with you. Of course, we have your book in the show notes, have that information in any way else they can connect with you, website, social. How else can people work with you?
Yeah, I do events, and those events are growing in size, which is lovely because the whole aim is to get to very, very large groups. And so I do them in Dallas. I have one in April and I have one in June. No, in July, sorry. I also have one in Houston. And then I have money DNA. So it's where did you inherit your money DNA? How does it affect you? What wants to change? What can you do with that DNA? And that one is a 4-day long event at Disney World, November the 5th through the 8th. And It also includes, for me, you work during the day very hard, and then we take that and you go and look at what that looks like in the park. So it includes your park tickets.
Neat.
Because if you're going to be in the heart of magic, learning to be magic, you may as well experience the magic. So it is a very, it's usually a very well attended one, especially the money DNA one, because people are curious. Money is not a commodity. It's a relationship. And the way you show up for that relationship determines how much you will or won't, can or can't have.
Judy, this is incredible. By the way, I'm from Fort Worth, so maybe I'll see you in Dallas.
That would be great. Yes, I'm from, well, I'm based in Tyler at the moment, but I go up to Dallas.
Oh, I love it. Yes. Yeah. Well, this has been so incredible. I'm on positive fire and feeling so uplifted and hopeful. And I feel strong in the hope. And thank you for that. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for shining your light on this podcast and on our beautiful world. And you're so wonderful. Thank you for the work you're doing.
And thank you for having me. Let's go have fun.
Yes, let's do that. This is an episode where you may want to listen back, or you may want to pull your car over if you're listening that way, or, you know, people do, they listen to podcasts doing the dishes, exercising, and driving. Those are the main ways they listen to it. So if you get to a stopping point, jot down some notes where she said one new thought, one new feeling, one new action. I'm not even sure if I got those right because I need to take the notes too. That exercise, wow. And to be able to shift it by pivoting your perspective, holding space for the pain or the negative thoughts, because it's there to help expand you in your in whatever it is you are moving forward in, but in your peak performance or in your soul's trajectory in this life. I hold space for you in that, and I hold space for me in that as well, giving myself a hug right now. So thank you so much for joining on this episode. I hope that if you found it inspiring, that you might think that you want to share it with someone so that it can inspire and bless them and encourage them. We need encouragement. Remembering that the word encourage comes from the word courage, and the word courage has the root heart in it. C-O-U-R is the Latin root for heart. So to be anchored and empowered by the heart. Thank you so much for creating this space with me. Also asking you to follow the show, subscribe, whatever it is on your app, you just scroll down, and to leave a review. That would be so wonderful. And that's what I have for you in this episode. Thanks for tuning in. I love you, whoever you are.